boy in the picture on the bottom is the doctor, my doctor. And you can watch the video if you feel like it.
Hey, is everybody in?
Yes, Chair, everyone is in. We can start.
Good morning, everyone. Honourable members, the team from Parliament, led by the Committee Secretary, Ms. Martinez, our researcher and our content advisor, committee assistant, and the Executive Secretary, Ms. Goldman. Morning on this very, very cold day. Today we will be dealing with the Infrastructure Development Act. One of the reasons we wanted to deal with this act is because of the addition of the infrastructure function to public works. So we need to know everything that relates to infrastructure. We also need to know how are we going to apply our responsibility that has been given by Parliament to play oversight role, knowing fully well that sometimes, though the infrastructure is in our department, but the budget and all that are still in the presidential team. So we really need to understand, but what is crucial, we have to know and understand this act because it is going to play a crucial role in our department. And people that have to play oversight, we need to be abreast with it. So SUAID is going to lead us and take us, guide us, and then we will pleading with all the members to note their comments so that when he is true, then we will ask questions. So that we don't ask questions while he's still presenting. We let him present, and then after that, we do ask questions. But before that, Nola, any apologies?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to honourable members and my colleagues. We've got a couple of apologies on our side. One is from the Honourable Van Staden. He will not be able to attend this meeting. The second one is from Honourable Thring. He's a bit delayed. He's attending another portfolio committee meeting. However, he'll join us a bit later. And then there's Honourable Shabalala, who is not feeling well, who will also not be joining today. I just got another one from Honourable Mashele. He is requesting to leave the meeting early because he has to attend another portfolio committee meeting. That should be all for my side, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Nola. No,
Chair? Yes. I don't know if the notice has arrived at the Secretary's office, but Honourable Thako has been moved to Home Affairs.
Honourable Thako has just joined our meeting, actually.
But we are not being by every guest, but he has been moved. I don't know if the communication has arrived.
Well, Madam, in the meantime, we have not received any ATC. That's
okay.
Yes. So as long as we haven't received anything, we'll take him still as our member.
Okay.
I'm not sure if your party has submitted the notification for ATC, so maybe you
okay.
Can check that.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, Honourable Charles, here, Home Affairs.
We will miss him, definitely, when he goes. But for now, he's still part of our team and definitely will contribute in today's workshop. Any other issues before we hand over to Shu'aib? Nothing, ne? Can then Shu'aib continue? Over to you. Mr. Benjamin.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, members, colleagues. Just two things before the presentation is shared. Just about the status of the documentation. The documents that were sent out were documents that was for members to read and to prepare for the meeting. Some documents members might have thought was really not, might think it wasn't related, but you'll see as we go through this how they relate. And again, after this, you may want to look at some of those to further inform you. So I'll share the screen. So I will disappear from the screen for now, but share the screen. Also said to the chair that, we'll try and go through this rather quickly so that we have more discussion than presentation, so that we can all assist one another to understand what's going on a bit better. So I'll switch the video off, but share the screen for now. Or just share the screen quickly. Okay. Is the screen visible? Could somebody indicate for me? Presentation?
Yes.
Perfect. Honourable members, this is the second portion that I wanted to do, except for talking about the status of the documents. This is just setting out that the presentation will cover four parts. The first slide after this will be the expected strategic outcome. Then we'll deal with policy. It will be a few slides that will deal with policy, which problem it is that this Act is trying to address, and where the mandate of the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure fits in. Second one will deal with the Act itself, and the Act here not just as the Act. The documents, one of the supporting documents gave quite a nice structured breakdown and specific shots straight from the Act. Inez's document gives that, and so if members want to see the Act and explain a good explanation of the Act and specific sections of the Act, that is Inez's document. But part two will look at this Act as a solution for a specific problem. Part three will deal with how this Act is supposed to be implemented, and we'll start talking about the impact on the department, and it will then also speak of how policy works, which is really messy and ad hoc rather than planned and predictive. In other words, the Act will say one thing, but other things happening after the Act will inform it much more. You will see much better when I get to part three what it is I mean by ad hoc, messy, and how it adds to workflows and resource allocations. And then part four is the important one for us, where we need to get to clarity. And that's the important aspect. Clarity regarding the impact of this Act as part of the oversight mandate of this committee. So it's not just the Act impacting the mandate of Public Works as a department, but the Act impacting our oversight mandate. So the intended strategic outcomes are for us to gain insight into this Act as unlocking. In other words, the Act as a key to unlock the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission as a driver of economic growth, poverty, etc. And infrastructure as key here meaning important. The role of public works and infrastructure, the sector in dealing with the identified challenges, the policy trajectory of Infrastructure Development Act, the PIC structures that are created by the Act, but also by memoranda of understanding, workflows that emerged from it, and but even the planning documents of the department itself, we'll have a look at that. Then the function of DPWI structures that was created by IDA, but also functions that are created by a memoranda of understanding, and then the impact of that on the mandate, and of course the impact, as I said, on our oversight mandate. Now, the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission was started very soon after the National Development Plan and Vision 2030, and there was a specific reason why it was created. And those reasons are normally narrated as slow growth, unemployment, poverty, growing poverty, inequality, etc. But what was PIC supposed to address? Yes, the large problem is slow growth, unemployment, and poverty and inequality and growing inequality, but the more specific one we need to go into, and that's what we very often refer to as the granular detail. So these, what I'm bringing up now is just a description of unemployment, slow growth, and what lies behind it. Skewed development, geospatial infrastructural inequality, etc. Skewed economic opportunities because of that. Sustained developmental need. Sustained development is needed. Now, I always think of 2010 World Cup, the massive infrastructure, the high employment numbers, higher than normal, and then soon after that, it dwindled. And that's what we talk about here, sustained development needed, and that is what PIC is supposed to address. And then the other aspect is that of affordability. Do we pay for infrastructure through taxes or user fees, or do we give private industry incentives? And here private also means international private companies and banks, etc., incentives to fund our projects. Now, when we talk of the components, and I mentioned granular aspects of the problem, I'm listing them all here. I'm tempted to leave it to members to go through it, but I think I should just go through these blocks and mention what they refer to. So the problem of slow growth, the problem of infrastructure lacking, and the problem of unemployment, etc., is one thing. But the other aspect is, how does government work when it's busy with infrastructure projects? And we know that these are never completed on time or within budget. And if they are completed, the developmental impact is not experienced because they came so late. And there the question of value for money comes in. Now, what PIC needs to do is PIC needs to, I'm just doing something here quickly. PIC needs to address the silo mentality between national departments. PIC needs to deal with the lack of integration between professional built environment, construction, and infrastructure sectors. It needs to deal with a lack of public-private engagement on working together on large infrastructure projects. But it also needs to deal with the issue of the inability to identify and mobilize effectively to implement strategic projects that can drive development and inclusive growth. The other important aspect is that matter of bureaucratic red tape and the lack of coordination, which goes back to silo mentality across national, provincial, and municipal levels of government. An alert to all members, if you see MP and M, N is national, P is provincial, and M will be from municipal. And then a big issue, if you take long to complete projects, and you ask for variation of orders, you didn't describe the scope of work properly, and members will go to Bait Bridge over the next weekend. You will hear this is one of those types of things where you did not do your technical assessment of the project initially properly. Therefore, your costing is not done properly. Therefore, the material you buy is of a low standard. And then when you eventually find out it's incorrect, and you then need more money because the material costs more. Now, why does stuff like that happen? It happens because of non-compliance with the Public Finance Management Act, but also with the regulations of the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure itself. Also financial and procurement regulations, that's what I mean by the regulations of the department itself, and the systems that it sets up. Those systems have over the years proven to enable corruption in tenders rather than prevent corruption in tenders. These things cause cost increases, projects are slowed down, and that leads to litigation by stakeholders, lobbyists, that further slow down project implementation. But there's the issue of bureaucratic lethargy that is there right across the three systems of three levels of government, where people sit on decisions for long periods. Then finally, when we do projects, very often we don't purchase, and this is actually in regulation and legislation currently, you need to purchase and procure services locally. What we have not done properly in our country is to ensure that we have a manufacturing sector that's localized. In other words, not just conglomerates and monopolies that manufacture material, but local people doing it as well. Because that is the issue. That is how we get sustainable employment creation through projects. I move to the next slide. Why am I not moving? Okay. Now, in this slide, we refer to policy as process. And this is really, policy really has everything to do with government and its work. A problem is identified, policy is developed, a plan is devised to deal with a problem and therefore implement the policy. Structures are set in place, and then legislation is processed and then resources allocated. That's human resources and the budget. That's normally the process. And so the policy we talk about here is the National Development Plan and Vision 2030 that contains not Millennium Development Goals anymore. The United Nations and us, our country as a signatory to the United Nations and its development imperatives, signed for sustainable developmental goals. Those must be completely implemented by 2030. We've got 10 years to go. 5 years after this committee's work is completed, there will be another 5 years left. So I just urge the committee to look at how important this is, that it will be 5 years to go for Vision 2030. So your oversight must assist this government to get to some of the sustainable developmental goals. The plan that was devised for us to get to those goals is the National Infrastructure Plan. Now that plan deals with large infrastructure projects that should create employment, economic growth, and development, and deal with and eradicate poverty, deal with the growing inequality between the rich and the poor. But I need to say that although that heading of the slide gives the impression that policy processes work in a linear fashion from left to right or right to left, and that it is properly planned, and that it always works out like that, that is simply not the case. Policy is cyclical, it is messy, rather than linear and predictive, and it is certainly not scientific. Now, the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission was started as a structure prior to it having legislation in place for it to have resources allocated. And therefore, the Infrastructure Development Act of 2014 was legislated. Now, this issue of problem, policy, plan, structure, legislation being cyclical means the following. That once you then have the structure called PIC and you have it legislated, you'll notice that even though the Act, as so nicely put out by Ines's document and in the Act itself, the Act itself often lacks, and therefore the implementation steps that are taken, in other words, later developments in planning and departmental or agential cooperation that takes place, fleshes out the structure of that plan further. And of course, creates more problems which may need further amendments to legislation, etc. Now, a question that needs to be asked is why must this Department of Public Works and Infrastructure be the department in government that functions in the PIC? And the answer has to do with DPWI as a lead coordinating department of a vast public works and infrastructure sector. It's the lead coordinator of departments across national, provincial, and municipal government levels. It's the policymaker and regulator of construction sector, the built professional built environment sector, and the sector that develops innovative green building materials and innovative green building systems. It's the accommodator, in other words, the landlord, landlady of the state. It's the contractor and leasor and lessee of the state and on behalf of the state. It's the immovable asset manager implementing the Government Immovable Asset Management Act by putting in place an immovable asset register. It's the employment creator that assists with that social security net that looks after the poorest of the poor, the indigent households. And it must be stressed, households, not individuals, but whole families, very often childhood families. And it leads and regulates and coordinates the EPWP across the three government levels. And I just need to say much more work needs to go into collaborative work in the executive sphere, in other words, departmental and ministerial sphere, around getting the Community Works Program and EPWP closer together. This is a repeat. That's what I mean by the Community Works Program. Because that security net doesn't work on its own as EPWP only. Just a bit further on the reason why DPWI is part of PIC. It doesn't only do what I said in the previous slide. The subsectors of this whole sector is the Construction Industry Development Board. That, by the way, I just need to signal to members, when we speak about the Integrative Development Management System, the IDMS, when we talk about the planning documents of the department that develops the IDA further, we will refer to that. Just to say that the CIDB developed with Treasury the IDMS for the construction sector. And that influences quite a lot and will assist quite a lot if it gets implemented properly with the issue of compliance with the PFMA and procurement, and will fight corruption. The professional built environment, that's the Council of the Built Environment with all those professional built environment associations. This is very important, and this is the issue of transformation. Members will remember these two, construction and professional built environment, huge amount of work to be done in terms of transformation and job creation. Arimore FA, Honorable Eklund. Social facilitation and project management of social infrastructure. And I don't know whether members can hear, there are two types of infrastructure already here. Large infrastructure for economic development only, and then social infrastructure structure that also assists with economic development because it creates jobs. But it's focused on service delivery to the people, clinics, hospitals, courts, etc. And remember, I refer here to the IDT and whichever entity or agency replaces it. But what we very often forget is the material aspect. And this is controlled by large conglomerates, international ones, cement, rebar. Rebar are those reinforced steel rods that go into concrete to put foundations up, but also to pour prefabricated panels for construction. PVC, which is both for electrical and water, aluminium, sand, water, trusses, that's woodwork, for roofing, rhino board, paint products, glues, and I leave the comma because there's more. So when we go paint products and glues, we actually start touching on one of the CBE's voluntary associations, which is engineering, where we very often just think of engineering as one type of thing, but remember there's chemical engineering, electrical engineering, and quite a whole lot here. Now, this is something that I need to signal. There's a lack of attention between the Department of Human Settlements and Public Works and other departments, but specifically these two, regarding the property industry. And when in the previous slide I spoke about accommodator and leasor and leasee on behalf of the state, this aspect is the aspect where the property management trading entity fails and struggles with, because a lot of the staff that should be inside the PMTE is in the sector. And so when we talk transformation, it's not just within the terrain of CIDB and CBE, but also in the property management and property sales industry and property development industry. Our trading aspect of PMTE is very weak. And it affects spatial development, sales management agency, property transfers, and even, and when I say agency, management agencies of large blocks of flats, there's lots of work to be done in those cases. So, the IDA itself, how was the IDA, what process, what was the legislative work, and just a little bit of it, we can't do all of it, that was done to enable the PIC. So to successfully drive the NID, the National Infrastructure Program and the National Development Plan to reach the SDGs, the PIC needed legislation, the IDA, to do the following. The PIC needs to have standard operating procedures in terms of procurement, contracting across these three levels of government. It needs systems of accounting and reporting that's required. Monitoring and evaluation must be there, and you can't monitor and evaluate without proper reporting, and you can't do that without systems of accounting. Good governance and efficient use of budgetary and human resource allocation. I'll say that over and over again. Good governance, and it must be consistently so across 5 years, not in the first year of a term there's first a hiccup because you don't have enough staff. Efficient use of the budget and human resource allocation. Prevent malpractice and corruption in multi-level infrastructure projects. That's what PIC needs to do, and that's what the IDT needs to assist it to do. It should be able to intervene and identify blockages to drive multi-level projects to completion. And it needs to be noted that the work towards the IDA used lessons from failed large infrastructure, but successful infrastructure projects as well. So airports development, the World Cup stadium construction development, and the Gautrain, but also Medupi and Kusile. So it took those lessons and it embedded it inside the IDA. So just quickly the aim, run through it very quickly. It should speed up and improve delivery and implementation of social and economic infrastructure. So they are the two types. Social, very often smaller, but more localized. Economic, larger, broader, very often even multinational. To maximize the developmental impact, through provisions that deal with structures, timeframes, processes, and outcomes, and that's very often the monitoring stuff and accounting stuff. And so the IDA legislates the coordinating structures of the PIC to provide the executive authority, ministers at national, and the MECs at provincial, and the mayors at municipal government to meet on a regular basis and drive the implementation of large infrastructure projects. Enables the administrative portion, DGs national, HODs provincial, and the admin teams at all three levels to work across the fragmented and siloed administration structures. And it provides for what we call SIPs, strategic integrated projects, to be registered that connect and align a number of catalytic projects together that together will make up the National Infrastructure Plan. And that catalytic is instructive. It is supposed to kickstart economic development through employment creation and localization of manufacturing, etc. Second slide on the Act. The PIC is therefore unlocked legislatively to implement multi-level government because it cannot coordinate, because it's legal. PIC to facilitate the usual fragmentation, and thirdly to ensure local employment creation and industrialization in the construction phase and right through procurement of locally manufactured components. Money stays inside for inside development, not necessarily for multinationals to buy and invest the money elsewhere and it leaves our country. Now, this structure is starting to take us to what our strategic outcome of the workshop wants to achieve. And that is, so what are the structures and functions? And how does that impact our oversight? How does it impact firstly the department, and then how does it impact our oversight? So SIP, strategic infrastructure project, every single one will have a chair and a forum of executive authorities. And they will consist of ministers, a minister as a lead minister that chairs the executive authorities of ministers, MECs, and mayors. And then the very important one here that should actually be in bold is the steering committee. So the SIP chair and forum of executive authorities oversees the steering committee. So every SIP will have a steering committee that's overseen by this SIP chair and forum of executive authorities. The secretariat is very important, and here you can see that it's highlighted as a nice orange egg there. It's orange, of course, public works colors. Chaired by the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure. So this year it got 60.8 million. If I apologize, members, if somewhere I wrote 68 million, that's my dyslexia coming in. 60.8 million for program four. I'll refer to the sub-program into which that goes just now. And the secretariat chaired by this department minister, executive authority for public works and infrastructure, and relevant ministers and deputy ministers. And then there's the PIC Council that does the broad overseeing work of PIC, chaired by the president, ministers, premiers, metro mayors, and SALGA. And then the PIC Manco, which is again similar executive authority. And this is the important one, the steering committee itself. So each SIP will have a steering committee. It's chaired by a SIP coordinator, which will very often be a minister, and the relevant departments and agencies or entities. And then it focuses on prioritization, strategic planning, coordination, unblocking, and of course the issue of localization in manufacturing and job creation. This is the important aspect, the accounting officers and authorities. They are responsible for each project's actual work on the ground. And important to remember that the Infrastructure Development Act does not change the way in which accounting, oversight, procurement, reporting and monitoring takes place. The PFMA remains the main act, and the system that it puts in place remains the one that must be followed. So here we get to the first portion, members and chairperson, of how this impacts, and this is the start of a new section of the presentation. So June 2019, DPW was changed to DPWI. Government Gazette number 42657, proclamation number 49 of 2019 said, we have infrastructure as part of DPW. Three added responsibilities. You coordinate all public infrastructure development. That's in page, on page 62 of the strategic plan of the department. And you manage the PIC secretariat, funded 6.8 million for this year, and the IDMS. The expected impact would be that DPWI would capacitate itself to perform these intergovernmental coordinating functions. That DPWI would rapidly enhance its capabilities in terms of ICT, supply chain management, project management, etc., to roll out and manage the IDMS. Now, I did some work there, but that was prior to the IDA being promulgated, and that work was done by the CIDB, as I mentioned earlier. And that it would increase expenditure in budget allocation, compensation of employees in the PMT. We noticed over the last few years, 6 years, 7 years, that has dropped. Now with the infrastructure being added, you would expect that to increase. And as I say to date, unfortunately, none of that happened. There is no indication of human resources, and there is no indication of extra money. The only money went to 6.8 into program 4 for the secretariat function. So what planning was done? As I said already, you've noticed that I'm negative when it comes to that, because our planning documents, the department's planning documents, does not show that much happened. First of all, the planning documents spoke of the following. And remember what I said earlier on. Policy is not linear, it is not predictive, it is ad hoc and messy, especially when you get closer to the implementation of it. This is part of that. That messiness and ad hocness does not mean that it is incorrect. It is naturally the case across the world. So, the planning document shows that it said that alongside the Infrastructure Investment Office in the Presidency, this department will structure the country's infrastructure-led economic growth under a single point of entry where the overall national infrastructure plan for South Africa is defined and a pipeline of bankable projects are focused within a new methodology. All of what is said here will be unpacked when I look at the slide of workflows for the PIC as per the Infrastructure Development Act. Effective from 1 April 2020, a sub-program, and this is now I'm speaking about where the 60.8 million was placed, called Infrastructure Development Coordination was created under Program 4, Property and Construction Industry Policy and Research. Infrastructure Development Coordination, 60.8 million. No extra staff. So that's 60.8 million for the secretariat function of the PIC and for what is said alongside the IIO, structure the country's infrastructure-led economic growth under a single point of entry where national infrastructure plan is defined, a pipeline of bankable projects focused within a new methodology. When we get to the workflows, we'll see what that means. The minister also made it clear in the planning documents that one of the golden threads running through the infrastructure development investment in this sixth administration is the rollout of the district development model across South Africa's 44 districts. I leave this year because it is not part of the Infrastructure Development Act per se, but it is important to notice that this impact on the IDMS and its impact on infrastructure development component locally. There's budgetary, we noticed in the planning documents, there was budgetary but no human resource allocation for that sub-program. In other words, there's also no budgetary and human resource allocation for these two, which is the overall coordinating responsibility of infrastructure across the country and aligning its systems and information and communications technology infrastructure to complete the rollout of the IDMS. Now, sorry, did I go too fast there? Which resources are there for PIC? Funding? What is meant by that methodology that was referred to earlier on? And I speak of memoranda of understanding and workflow. The infrastructure fund has been announced, $100 billion available over 10 years, $10 billion for the current and the MTF baseline. The infrastructure fund announced as gap funding for large-scale infrastructure investment. It excludes specific social infrastructure projects, those initiated and managed by the IDT or its replacement agency entity. Now, this exclusion here, nowhere in the documentation, planning documentation, does it say so. It is my assumption that it excludes it. And the department and PIC secretariat may want to inform us and say that I am incorrect. The memorandum of agreement and the resulting workflows. Now, let me just backtrack a little bit and remind members. I said policy is not linear, it's not predictive, it's ad hoc and messy. What we're talking about here is how did what happens after the IDA, after the IDA's promulgation, but enabled by the IDA's promulgation, what happened then and what impact does that have on the infrastructure component? The fund is referred to as an innovative method. Sorry, the fund exists, but an innovative method is required to fund, to finance and manage infrastructure projects across these three levels and to circumvent governmental fragmentation. The memorandum of agreement brought together three government departments and their agencies. It brought together DPWI, National Treasury, and the DBSA. Now, at the unveiling of this, or rather at the signing of the MOA, we heard of, and this happened on 17 August 2020, Infrastructure South Africa, for the first time, as a structure that now was housed within the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. And, of course, my question there, between brackets, there must be an impact on this department, on this portfolio committee's oversight mandate. This point is important. The planning documents refer to working with the IIO, the Infrastructure Investment Office in the Presidency, and the DPWI. With the announcement of the ISA in DPW, Infrastructure South Africa in DPWI, clearly that announcement cements the Presidency and DPWI as key in the implementation of the IDA of 2014. I'm saying it again. That announcement cemented the IIO office in the Presidency and the DPWI, not the Secretariat, but this ISA cements it even stronger together as the key implementation structure of the Infrastructure Development Act as a vehicle to drive infrastructure development to reach the SDGs, implement the NIT, etc. So what is SIDS methodology to achieve the policy as stated in the National Growth Path, the National Infrastructure Plan, and the National Development Plan. Sorry, National Growth Path I didn't speak about. Let me just quickly say what it is. National Growth Path was a phase in the development towards the NIP that assists us to get the NDP implemented to reach the SDGs. Now, the SIPS methodology, SIPS really refers to the South Africa's large infrastructure development system as a method for planning, project preparation, and funding workflows. Development targets for every single SIP focused on youth employment, gender empowerment, and disability targets, greening the economy, skills development, and broad-based empowerment. Those are criteria for every single SIP that this method will use to decide whether a project is bankable in a specific way. This will all make sense when I get to the diagram of workflow. The SIPS methodology relates to the identification, the consideration, the evaluation, approval, and implementation of sustainable. That's a big difference. To put sustainable in front of infrastructure is massive, because when we did the World Cup stadium, there wasn't too much. The debate was there around sustainability, but we saw how jobs just dropped and how our economy just went down because we didn't have enough work, and the infrastructure and built environment sector became very quiet in the country. This is sustainable infrastructure that we are talking about in this case. But this is about the bankability of projects and how they get categorized before they get funded and before they get gazetted as per the Act. And here, the IIO DPWI Infrastructure South Africa, with the Development Bank of South Africa and National Treasury, implements the IDA. Here's the workflows I spoke about that will make things a bit clearer. Well, it may bring more questions, but it will make certain things more clear. So, just to say, members, this was presented, a version of this was presented to us on the 24th of June 2020. What is added here is what happened after 24 June, and is informed also by the planning document. So on the left, we have all the departments, including SIPS projects and state-owned enterprises. So the infrastructure, the large infrastructure projects, is from these departments. They get fed into a comprehensive infrastructure project pipeline, and they come into the structure of PIC. So the large orange block with what looks like pink and a few bluish rectangulars. That's the structure, the workflow structure of the PIC. And it does the following. Using the Infrastructure Development Act, or the Act, enables PIC to do the following. Assess infrastructure projects using the SIDS methodology. The infrastructure investment management and oversight takes place inside here over the infrastructure fund, over that 100 billion over 10 years, and for this year, the 10. The national infrastructure plan is housed here. The three parties that signed the memorandum of agreement is at the star here as the IIO, the presidency, IIO in the presidency, and the ISA in DPWI, and DBSA and National Treasury. The PIC technical task team, these are built environment professionals from the Department of Public Works and elsewhere, and then there will be a project assessment process that takes place. They very often will work with this as well as the investment infrastructure investment management and oversight group. But in terms of these projects inside the project pipeline, they get assessed here as well as by ISA DPWI. The infrastructure mechanisms Those are legal and financial mechanisms, both the IDA and PFMA and procurement regulations and practice notes of Treasury. And what is stress is the matter of compliance at all costs. And the other one that can be stressed and must be stressed is monitoring and evaluation and review and comprehensive information management system for infrastructure. That comprehensive information management system is the IDMS in my view. So once it's processed, the large orange arrow refers to the specific, once they're processed through the technical task team and others, they become specific, they are channeled in specific types of funding models before the gazetting takes place as per the Act. I apologize for that. It basically says at the top there, implementing the infrastructure project workflows. This is the administrative process. If I just go back, the process here is both political, in other words, the executive authorities, INPIC, the secretariat, etc., as well as technical team. What we have here is the more administrative process after the stage of gazetting. So, sorry, towards the stage of gazetting. So these C blocks here are the types of funding models. So you will have infrastructure projects assessed as commercially viable, commercial banks, multinational development banks, and development finance institutions will deal with this group. The next one is infrastructure projects that require blended financing. And this is a very interesting term, blended financing as funding from both public financing as well as private financing. That gets sent to infrastructure fund for funding in terms of criteria set by the Infrastructure South Africa in the DPWI. And then the third block at the bottom, infrastructure projects that will be solely funded by the fiscus. Now, when I said earlier on that the statement I made of social infrastructure project will not be funded, it needs to be contested by the department and ISA and PIC. My understanding, if I must contest my own statement of earlier on, I would expect them to tell us that this lower block, infrastructure projects funded solely by the fiscus, would include social infrastructure projects. But one will await for a response in that regard. Remember, sometimes we make statements to elicit a response with which one can work in oversight. So these are the three funding ways. These go straight to departments, and you do your ordinary so human settlement and water and sanitation would, for instance, do oversight over a human settlement project, a spatial development project that brings together indigent, poor, as well as upper class, in other words, mixed development of housing that is so urgently required to heal our society. And then once that is done, it gets gazetted, a strategic infrastructure project is gazetted, and it's processed in terms of the Act. It is then it goes through the PIC, and that PIC will then, through the Secretariat and the steering committee and the structures I referred to on the previous slide, it will be managed and all blockages should be dealt with there. This is just a list of the tasks of each one of the three in the memo of agreement. ISA DPWI will coordinate the infrastructure value chain. As was said by the minister in the planning document and by the department in the planning document, it will house a comprehensive infrastructure pipeline and related investment layout for the country. The development, assessment, management, project preparation, implementation, and monitoring of business plans for the project will be done here. The DBSA plays the role of establishing the infrastructure fund. It will establish a dedicated implementation unit to manage and administer the fund, and it will facilitate financial structuring, procurement, and implementation of priority blended finance projects and programs as identified by the Infrastructure South Africa in DBWI. Sorry, before I carry on with National Treasury, DBSA will practically put the business project, the business plan for the project, give it to ISA DBWI for assessment. National Treasury will facilitate government's contribution of funding by putting in place defined budgeting processes for the infrastructure fund. So there, that will be awaited. As I said, once the Infrastructure Development Act was promulgated, there were certain processes that developed from there, the memo of understanding, of agreement, etc., and the planning documents of the department that informed the process and workflows further. I am saying that these three tasks of each one of these will bring further development, as I said, in the ad hoc way of policymaking that will possibly necessitate amendments to Act and procurement regulations. Chair and members, we're getting to the end of the presentation, the tail end. We have four more slides to go. And I contend that what we've done thus far provides clarity of certain things regarding the infrastructure component. The planning documents, this is the one of one clarity, the planning documents of the department do not include Infrastructure South Africa as an entity or agency of the department. In it, in the planning documents, there's no information that includes the head of the Infrastructure Investment Office of the Presidency inside the structures of the department as the Chief Executive Officer of Infrastructure South Africa. On 17 August, it was announced that that dual role would be there. Funding allocation of 60.8 million in this sub-program was made, specifically for coordination of infrastructure development. No budgetary or human resource allocation to the main vote took place for the overall coordinating responsibility of infrastructure projects and the role of ISA DBWI. And no funding allocation was made for DPWI to align its systems for the rollout and the completion of the IDMA. So where does that leave us as a portfolio committee? It provides us with conceptual clarity, or an opportunity to gain conceptual clarity. And members, the deliberation, I think the questions will further assist. We will not possibly have answers to all your questions, but it will also later on give us clarity. First of all, the repetition will take place now of what has happened. DPWI is created, infrastructure is added, a cementation process of IIO in presidency and ISA in DPWI takes place, and an MOA between these three parties or the departments take place. That plus the Act as a vehicle that assists PIC to be the driver and the infrastructure fund to be the fuel and SIDS to be the method, as well as the PIC and admin workflows that come from the Act, provides us with a bouncing ball of possibly achieving, and I'm saying possibly because I'm a realist, the SDGs on time, and implement the National Infrastructure Plan and the NDP. Further conceptual clarity from that may seem very obvious, that first little slide there. We need to understand that there's two, we will deal with four things here that will assist us. First of all, this department has internal mandatory functions. Those internal mandatory functions are on infrastructure as social infrastructure, as implemented by the IDT or whichever entity or agency will replace it. But there are external mandatory functions. And external here is between inverted commas, because external, as things develop, will become internal. But these external mandatory functions are for us to look at PIC as a driver, infrastructure fund as fuel, SIP methodology, and the PIC and admin workflows. But we have to be specific about what we choose and what we look at in terms of this external mandatory function. Because if you don't, you will water down your internal mandatory function as a portfolio committee. You have to do oversight over construction and infrastructure development and job creation through the EPWP as the original mandate of the department. The infrastructure component adds this external mandatory function, and you'll have to be very clear specifically what you focus on. So the external mandatory function is that of broad government policy work that deals with infrastructure as a component of large infrastructure projects. But really what should be here is the National Infrastructure Plan and the achievement of the SDGs. Now that is not a public works function on its own. That is a broad government one, as well as all other portfolio committees that relates to infrastructure and social development and economic development. If we come back to the internal mandatory one, it's the governmental policy work, and it's the DPWI internal mandatory function that must be focused on. So what does that mean? Oversight over the external mandate. This is what it means. And what it means is, as a portfolio committee, we shouldn't shy away from broad government policy work over large infrastructure projects, over economic growth, over job creation, over dealing with poverty and inequality. But that cannot be done by the portfolio committee in the way that it did it in the past. It has to influence Parliament, so that this committee does its work differently. We need to do collaborative oversight with other committees. I list some of them there. But we need to work like and with the Standing Committee on Public Accounts. And our specific focus when we do this is not on the deliverables of the other departments, human settlements and water and sanitation, transport, etc., but on the executive authority of public works and infrastructure and the CEO of Infrastructure South Africa as dual investment, infrastructure investment office and PIC secretariat leader. The oversight tasks in terms of our internal mandatory function, the main vote, is huge. There's incomplete and weak policy work, the public works draft bill, amendments to the CBE and CIDB Act to strengthen transformation of sectors, the expropriation bill. I did not mention it, but the PIC is allowed to expropriate. INEZ's document has a portion of that in. It's allowed to expropriate according as per the Expropriation Act of 1975. Can't say much more about that, but we will not lengthen our stay here. Thirdly, the work of shared services, supply chain management, financial administration, procurement of DPWI and PMTE. The order challenges of EPWP that may give us a negative audit opinion soon, and that will be due to an aging ICT reporting system. The state of professional built environment capacity within the PMTE at head office, but also at the 11 regional offices in the light of spending compensation of employees that's been decreasing over the 6 or 7 financial years. The need to move to preemptive rather than ad hoc maintenance of government buildings and properties the need for stronger, adequate management and maintenance of the Prestige project, in especially regional office Cape Town and Pretoria. Our members suffer from this when they are in the villages. The IDMS and PIC Secretariat to be reported on in detail in quarterly performance reports. And this is internal. This is how we can deal with some of PIC internally. Because remember, we've got a 6.8 million that was allocated. And then the capacity for ISA and the assessment processes of large infrastructure projects for the infrastructure fund must be reported to in our quarterly performance report. Thank you.
Hello.
Chairperson, we are completed.
The chairperson, I think, is off. She had load shedding, so. Somebody needs to take over the chair. Maybe Lindy or
Lola. Lola should first take over procedurally.
All right, cool.
Ms. Martinez. There's nobody.
It looks like it's the three of us. Who else is on the line?
Yes, ma'am.
Here.
Load shedding. I'm asking for Nola to take over.
I am, yes, I've been struggling to get back into this thing. Sure, can you please just stop sharing your screen?
Perfect.
Thank you. The chairperson has mentioned that she needs to run into another meeting quickly and has requested Honorable Mjobo to take over this process. Is Honorable Mjobo online? Honorable Mjobo? Honorable Mjobo, can you hear?
She was trying to speak just now, but I think she's battling as well. I think her signal's also a bit of a problem.
Lola, could you facilitate? Yes. Let me take questions. Oh, there's Honorable Mjobo, I hear you.
Honorable Mjobo, are you back online? All right, I think because Honorable Mjobo is now, are you online? Jesus, the network is horrible on her side. All right, I think at this point I should request Honorable Members to just use the raise your hand option so that they can be noted to ask questions. Can we get any hands, Honorable Members? I'd like to note Honorable Hicklin, Honorable Graham.
No.
All right, please go ahead, Honorable Hicklin.
Thanks, Nola. I think someone was trying to call you. It may have been Lindy. I just want to make two points, and the two points that I want to make are key, I think. The first is, I know that I've been going on quite often about the immovable asset register, and it's when I looked at this presentation, that fantastic presentation, Shoaib really takes in, absolutely superb. It just highlighted to me yet again that I'm not going to take the glib statements that we get from the staff who give us the same figures every 3 months, every 6 months. No changes take place in the notes that they make where they say the figures are the same or the figures are whatever, 81,000 pockets of land. We have to have, an accurate immovable asset asset register if we are going to really perform any kind of oversight function. Because if we, A, don't know what kind of buildings we have and where we have them, and B, what kind of pieces of land we have and where we have them, it's impossible to do oversight. And I really think we have to start pressurizing the department in whatever way we can to get that immovable asset register completely up to date. We've been around for a year and a half, and there have been no changes in that immovable asset register. And the other thing that I want to say is that I think our role as a department, our role as a committee, I mean, in oversight, particularly on supply chain management, with this new ISA, is going to be absolutely key, particularly supply chain management, procurement, and funding, because that is where we are going to find loopholes being created if we are not vigilant to the nth degree. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Hicklin. Honorable Graham Murray.
Right. Sorry, I had to just quickly unmute. First of all, I'd like to pay homage to both Shuaib and Inez. The documents that we got in advance of this meeting, as well as the presentation today, are just phenomenal. If I think about how convoluted this whole thing is and how difficult it has been to pull everything together to make some sort of sense of it, I really think we need to pay them huge respect for the work that's gone into the documents. Inez raises quite a lot of issues in her document, you know, part of that being the legislation around this, because if you look at the definitions in the Act, as Inez says on page 7 of her document, some of the Acts might need to be amended in order for this full role and responsibility to be handed over to the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. So that's one of the things we're going to have to look at when we do the public works bill as well. I think the infrastructure component is going to have to be very clearly spelt out in the document that we eventually take to Parliament. Also on page 23, Inez raises a very important point with respect to the costs relating to the functioning of a steering committee. And that's very valid, because when a steering committee is established in terms of a SIP, who's going to pay the costs for that steering committee to function? Is that covered anywhere in any of the legislation that we are doing? Page 28 of Inez's document speaks about the timeframes. She encapsulated those into one little section that she'd drawn out of the Act. But there's no, there doesn't seem to be any penalty around non-compliance with those stipulated time frames. So I think that's also something that we need to look at, because part of the big sell of this whole project is the cutting of bureaucracy, the cutting of red tape, and speeding up the processes. Now, we need to know that if town planning is an issue around a project and a municipality is not coming to the party with respect to ensuring that town planning mechanisms have been circumvented and shortcut, then what are the penalties that will be imposed? Who will be responsible for that sort of penalization of the entity? There are 18, on page 29 of Inez's document, she stipulates the 18 projects that were part of the commencement of the Act in 2015. How many of those have been implemented, have been completed? Because part of what the big sell is that these big projects will be implemented. So is that happening since the gazetting of the Act? On page 21, she also gives some good questions that need to be addressed. And then one of the questions I have is, nowhere do I see any reference to ongoing maintenance and facilities management of these big infrastructure projects. Surely, if we are spending 100 billion rand over the next 10 years on infrastructure, we need to make sure that somewhere there is a contractual obligation of the client department to do facilities management and maintenance of that project. And particularly, say, in a municipality, one of the things we've always driven is that a minimum of 8% of your CapEx should be allocated to maintenance of infrastructure. It's not being done because municipalities don't have money, so the first thing they hit is their maintenance budget. We have to make sure that we cannot continue to build new infrastructure in this country while we allow the existing infrastructure to just fall by the wayside. So I think somewhere we have to demand that there is something where maintenance and facilities management becomes a priority on new infrastructure builds. The other thing is that the IDT is being closed down, but in all the documents that we've been given, we're being told that this ISA is not about social infrastructure, it's about large-scale infrastructure projects. So we need to understand that this is not supplementing or replacing IDT. So my question then is, what entity is going to be responsible for social infrastructure build in the department if the IDT is being closed and ISA is not going to be, you know, replacing it? And then finally, my big ongoing questions are, what kind of structure is ISA? We haven't seen any organogram. I've put in questions to the minister on this. And obviously once we get the questions back, I will share that with the committee. But the questions I've asked are, what kind of structure is it? Is it, I mean, we had a section, what was it, section 2 and a section 3 in this department. So I can't remember if that's the right terminology. So IDT was a section 2 and the others are a section 3 in terms of funding. What kind of entity are we dealing with? Where is the funding coming from? So we've got the 60.8 million. Is that paying salaries? Is that paying for office space? Is that paying additional, you know, the cell phone? What is that 60.8 million paying? And if it's not covering the ongoing day-to-day costs of that entity, where's that money coming from? Where's the budget for ISA? Because ISA resides within the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. PICC resides in the presidency. The IIO resides in the presidency. The CEO of the IIO is now the CEO of the ISA. We've also seen that there are other staff members that have been assigned to the ISA. How? My understanding of government is that you cannot put somebody in a position unless there's an organogram and it's a funded post. So how are these people being assigned to these positions? Who is making these decisions? Who decided to put this person in as the CEO? Was there a process in which other people were asked to apply, or was it just somebody positioned there? So those are some of the things that I'm finding very concerning around the way this whole thing is being done. And it's all being done under our noses, behind our backs. This portfolio committee has not been kept informed of anything that is happening. All the information we have is coming out of the media because we're not being given any information by the department. So I do think we need to demand more transparency from the department, and we need to know exactly how this ISA is functioning because we are supposed to be doing oversight over it. So those are my inputs at this stage. I hope that's okay.
Thank you, Honourable Graham Murray. I note that Honourable Van Schalkwyk also has raised her hand. Over to you, Honourable Member. You need to unmute yourself, ma'am. You are still on mute.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Yes, you're audible now. Yes, you can go ahead.
Thank you. Good. Thank you, Nola, and good morning to the members and staff. And thank you, Tushu A, for that excellent presentation. I think it's shedding a lot of light. Yes, can you hear me? Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Karan.
Okay, thank you very much. So I've been partly covered by the previous colleagues by the inputs they are making, and mine is very short. When I look at the social security net broadening, I was wondering issue 8, is there some kind of relationship or working together with other sister departments, especially social development, to try and remedy that or build on that social security net, the broadening of that one? Then when we look at the steering committees that needs to be established, I'm just wondering, at all the different levels, who's going to fund the costs relating to those steering committees? And when we look at the that funding allocation of 60.8 million, I'm just wondering whenever we are talking about funds, then surely there's some shortcomings that's arising. So I would like to know if that 60.8 million will be sufficient funding to roll out that whole mandate, and what can be done by the PC to address that shortcoming, especially when we look now as we move towards the BRRR process. What can be done? We do as the portfolio committee to address some of those funding challenges. And I have also the same concern with regards to the removal as it register, because we I'm realizing that we were supposed to get feedback on update on the removal bill as it registered during this period. So if we can perhaps put that into prioritize that item in terms of our next committee program, so that we know exactly where we stand in terms of the immovable asset register. Then when I look at the legislative needs, I know if we have some bills that in the pipeline, but it's long drawn out processes. In order for many things to happen quickly, is it possible that in the absence of a clear bill or act, that there can be regulations being put in place just to assist this process to move speedily, even if it's temporary regulations, just to breach that thing, so that we know that what is happening, it's not against the law or it's not a prohibition, but we don't have that legislative imperative or that legislation in place currently to strengthen or make sure that the different mandates are being rolled out. So I'll pause there, members. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honourable Sharon. Yes, Nola.
Honorable Joseph.
Yes, Honorable Kopane.
Can I ask questions?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, honorable members, and thank you for the presentation. Honorable Joseph, you know, when the presentation was done, or when I read the presentation, especially the introduction part of the overview of the Infrastructure Development Act, somehow it is mentioned that we are not given the legal implications with regard to these additional changes that is being highlighted to the Department of Public Works. But I think as members, what is important, if we do an overview of the legislation, it is important to know what are the legal implications of this. So if the legal implications are not mentioned, it also becomes difficult. Is it possible that next time you are giving the legal implications of how these changes are they going to affect us? That is what we need to know. That is my first point. And the other thing, Chair, I think what is not clear is maybe to tell us these additional responsibilities that is being added to the Department of Public Works. They are highlighted as three of them. But we need to be given the true picture of how it's affecting the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. because we know that this department, it is expected to expand its capabilities, but unfortunately, we are not given the true picture of what is happening. I would really appreciate if we can be given the true picture of how this additional responsibility affects the current Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. And also in terms of human resource, because there should have been somewhere, some sort of a guideline in terms of to say this additional responsibility, in terms of what is expected of us. Human resource, we need so much. In terms of the cost, we need so much. But nothing is being said to us. So it makes it difficult for us to make an oversight if we don't have the exact picture of what is happening. Though we understand that there's an additional 60.8 million to program 4, but we need to have additional picture. But the other thing, Chair, I think it also requires, like Honorable Samantha that she indicated, it also requires the act to be amended, because some of the definitions doesn't really reflect that public works. If you read the definitions in terms of who is the minister, it still quotes another minister outside the Department of Public Works. So definitely the act needs some amendment. If maybe we can be given the responsibility, some clarity, how do we go forward? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Member, Honourable Nxumalo, Honourable Suwisa.
Thank you, Chair. We are suffering from load shedding, that's right. I don't know what happened. Chair, I would also have to concur with my colleagues when it comes to, because I'm looking at, I need clarity on the two sections where it says large economic infrastructure and social infrastructure. And then according to Shahid's explanation that the large economic infrastructure, I don't know if I'm correct if I say it's a multinational or it's a multi-international or something. Do we have rights over to do oversight over those projects or those infrastructures? And again, it takes me back to the three sections that Shahid was showing us, and then the last one that spoke about social infrastructure, and it takes us to the finance part of it comes from the fiscal, which I think that one I'm clear, the localized one, I'm clear that we do have rights to do oversight. But I need clarity on those ones that the other two, do we have any powers to do oversight over those? And then I would go back to the act itself. And then it says to provide for the facilitation and coordination of public infrastructure development, which is significant to economic and social. Again, it takes me back to that economic part of it as to do we really have powers to do oversight over those ones. And what will be our role? Again, it takes us back to this Infrastructure South Africa thing. That we've been asking that if IDT falls out, what's going to happen? It was a Schedule 2. The person that's coming in, is it a Schedule 2? Is it a Schedule 3? What's going to happen? Why couldn't the same schedule be implemented? Maybe we can get a clarity on that. Also, what the thing of maybe somewhere there should be amendments, because minister and ministers, we don't know actually who's going to be accountable for what. So maybe the act needs to be looked into and see what can be done about it in order to be accommodative of public works and all the entities that will be falling under that. And then also there's a problem of the PMTE. How is PMTE, what will be the role of PMTE at the end of the day?
are they going to have more responsibilities? There are going to be more funds taken into it. And again, what is going to happen with monitoring and evaluation when you come to that? Because we have a serious problem in this department of monitoring and accountability. You're always here of all the things that are happening there. And also the hide and seek that is being played by the department itself. Most of the communication comes via media statements, and then most of the questions are being answered depending on the platform that we are on. If they are on the PC, they gave us this answer. If they are in Parliament, they gave us this answer. If they are at SCOPA, they gave us this answer. And what are we actually going to do about the whole thing? But I'm very dissatisfied about that we had to be the ones that initiate that. We need to be brought on board about this act. And the department didn't even think that, okay, let's bring all committee members together and then we must come and explain this act, because this is something totally new to the department or something totally new to the PC. And another thing, Acting Chairperson, I'm worried that we are going to take forever to get infrastructure kicking, especially with the IDT being kicked out, and we still don't know what the infrastructure SA is actually doing. What is actually their mandate? What is happening? What is their organogram? I think the same questions that Honorable Graham has sent, I've also sent some of those questions. What is the way forward? What is your plan? Because they are giving us a plan of 2035. We want to know in the coming 6 months what's going to happen. And here we have an act which there's a possibility that we'll have to, as a committee, have to say that we need to look into this and see if it cannot be amended where possible to make sure that everything runs smoothly. Thank you, Acting Chair.
Honorable Smith, Honorable Trin, Honorable Shwagu, Honorable Numal, on that order.
Thank you, Chair. I've obviously joined the meeting a bit late, and then also had some issues as well with what load shedding and that's taking place at the moment. But I think the colleagues, as I've listened also to part of the presentation, was upcoming late, and the comments also made by colleagues, I think that some of the very same things that the ACDP that I've been raising on behalf of our party have been with regards to the asset register and the importance of this particular committee ensuring that we have an asset register that is accurate. So I think that I'm looking forward to a meeting where we are able to ensure that we have that particular information, and I think that the committee needs to insist going forward that we have accurate information with regards to our asset register. How are we going to be able to, if we talk about just maintenance, which Honourable Graham was speaking about earlier, Samantha was speaking about earlier. I think if we're speaking about maintenance, I think also Honourable Hickling and some of the other colleagues, how are we going to be able to properly maintain properties that belong to our particular department if we don't know where those particular properties are or buildings are? So I think very key is the asset register. And then I think I concur also with my colleagues just with regards to the lack of clarity with regards to some of the other entities, just like the IDT. How is the role of IDT going to be picked up? Who is going to be doing it? Which department is going, which entity is going to be doing it? So I think those would just be some of the concerns that I would have. Thank you, Acting Chair.
Honorable Chuck, Numalo.
Um,
Honorable Numalo had stated on the WhatsApp group that he is covered. So I guess you can take another member. Thank you.
Okay. I'm still here. Sorry. I don't...
Okay,
ah, no, I'm actually fine. I think that some of the questions that have been asked by my colleague, I'm actually covered.
Thank you, Acting Chair. I'm not going to, Inez can jump in on some of the questions that was raised regarding her document and the Act itself. I don't have answers to all the questions, of course, but just to say that it must just be remembered that the fact that the department is not doing the presentation on the Infrastructure Development Act is our choice. We chose to do the Infrastructure Development Act as a preparatory stage to get our members informed of some of the complexities in terms of process flow, etc. So it's a strategic choice that we made, and members should use what happens during the engagement. During the presentation is one thing, but during the engagement as we carry on now, as material to further interrogate. Because remember, we're also part of the policy-making process. So we do oversight over the minister, but some of the things that we are asking the minister and ISA, DPWI, as well as the presidency and PIC, those are questions that further inform their policy and even legislation as we carry on. So, but let me say that just on the question of large infrastructure projects and small or micro infrastructure project or social infrastructure project. Remember, social infrastructure projects can in some cases be large infrastructure projects as well. What we need to make a distinction is actually therefore not just plainly and starkly between large and social, but notice that they actually join up at a particular time at a particular space. What is crucial, however, is to remember that we have the right as a portfolio committee to do oversight over funding of all projects, whether they are funded by the multi-development or the multinational development banks, or by ourselves as public. We don't only do oversight over public funding. We do oversight in a case of like this, where the private sphere is being brought in. We will do oversight over that work as well. I just need to indicate that the significance of this attempt is that South Africa is tackling a problem that requires expenditure and huge capabilities in terms of professional built environment capabilities and financial management across multi-level government. And that often comes from bringing in the private industry that has the capacity. What is crucial is that the IDA assists PIC. The IDA, an act on its own, is not the solution. What happens as you implement the act, that is what is crucial. That you strengthen your procurement regulation and your monitoring and evaluation to ensure that no gap is left for malpractice and malfeasance. The other important thing is that the act that we are dealing with today does not take over any public finance management system, accounting and monitoring. It actually feeds into what is there already. And as I mentioned the IDMS, we did not focus on the IDMS and its relation to this Infrastructure Development Act and the work of PIC. I mentioned the 44 districts and the district development model. Some of the work that's required in some of the underdeveloped municipalities is so big that it might turn into large infrastructure projects. And I think that is why I'm saying don't cut too starkly between large and social. They merge. And that is why there are three or four models of funding for each. The oversight inside PIC, members need to interrogate and insist that the Executive Authority of Public Works and Infrastructure give a well-fleshed out, a comprehensive response, not a narrative that is not linked to material and concrete aspects of what you are talking about. Because very often, the responses we get are not specific enough for us to get well informed. And I'm saying that this type, the questions that members have asked, specifically, and I think we must think of that presentation with that orange block within which you have all the extra granular structures of PIC and how projects will be assessed before they go for funding. That is the type of work that IFA, Public Works and Infrastructure, must answer. So members asked the correct question. One of the questions, IFA, DPWI, which staff are there and what capacities do they have to do this? The other question that members ask about IFA, Public Works and Infrastructure, in terms of where is it scheduled, the question needs to be, that interrogation needs to be looked at in a different way. If you look at the PMTE, PMTE does not have a schedule. It is an internal component of the department, which is why it has shared services such as for supply chain management, procurement, staffing, etc. But that must then be asked. So we shouldn't ask about scheduling because that takes us away from possibly getting the proper material evidence. To get the material evidence, we need to ask and say, we assume ISA Public Works and Infrastructure is an internal component similar to PMTE. Can you please provide us with a detailed organogram? And we understand that that detailed organogram will go into what the investment infrastructure investment office in the presidency is also doing. But can you please give that to us and think of that not as a full response that you will get, but as an initial one on which you can build another question and further oversight work? Because we need to possibly even go into the offices. It's always the middle range of oversight is that of going in there. So I think I said that large infrastructure projects, the funding, even if it's multi-development bank, we have the right to do oversight. But then I need to just say that that is the reason why when I spoke about clarity of oversight in terms of how this impacts us, we cannot, as this committee, do oversight like we used to. We have to do oversight collaboratively with those departments where they are busy in a steering committee. In other words, we need to figure out which structural infrastructure projects, which SIPs involved were checked by our ISA or assessed by ISA DPWI. Which departments are implementing with whom? And we need to tell our colleagues in other portfolio committees, we alerting you to this is happening, can we do oversight over this together? That's the only way in which you're going to be able to do oversight over this type of entity. The other aspect I would like to the issue of the immovable asset register. Thanks for that, honourable members. We need to program that. I think we did at one stage decide that whenever they do a quarterly report, they must update us on the IRA, and they did not. Sorry, IAR, not the IRA. You're not busy with the Republican Army in Ireland. So the other matter about IDT closing down and ISA possibly replacing it, it is not, it's a fair question. It's a fair assumption to make. And that assumption is fair because there is not enough information coming from the executive authority and the department in terms of, so what is replacing the IDT? And I think that question must be asked even though members are feeling that they are being repetitive. Repetition very often has function. It's not just to put people to sleep. It's also to make people itch and realize, I need to give the proper answer here, otherwise the people are going to carry on with it. Oversight is of that nature. Then, yes, I work on the social development, with the social development department on community works projects. Community work project must be stronger. I think in the past we said we would do so and we were unable to do so because the issue of the social security network in our country, in a country where growing inequality or the gap between the have and the have-nots is so stark, we need to do more work on this. Steering committee's funding. It must be understood that these steering committees are, the function of the steering committees is for a specific SIP. It's not as if there's a steering committee for everything. It's when a strategic infrastructure project has been categorized as being funded in a particular way, it has a business plan, the business plan has been assessed, it then goes to a particular place where it's decided that's what's busy happening, it's been assessed, it's a tick box, and it carries on down the workflow of the PIC. Once it is at inside PIC as a steering committee, that steering committee is doing a level of oversight that we have always said, we've always understood, the first person to do oversight, the first official person to do oversight over a department is the minister's office. In the case of this project, the first, in the case in SIPs, the work of the PIC, the first place where oversight has taken place is the steering committee's inside PIC over every committee and its expenditure and its timelines and time frames. Our work is the secondary one with our sister committees to check on, so what is happening with the housing project in that particular, those three or four municipalities. And you can now see when I say this, how the district development model comes in. And how this is placing the lens in one space over a number of departments, if it's a strategic infrastructure project, and a multiple number of committees does oversight over it. And which is why I'm saying that Parliament needs to make a strategic decision of how we do oversight over these. It's not just the committee that must make that decision. The legislative issue of this act referring to the Minister of Economic Development as the lead minister and lead department in this act, there isn't really a need for an amendment to effect that. I'll repeat that. There isn't a need in the definition, even though the definition refers to a different minister. There is not a need to amend that act. That would take time that would be wasted. That is why in the presentation I referred to the specific proclamation that was made by the President He does this as per an act. Sorry, he does this as per the constitution that allows him to shift function from one minister to another. The process in which he does it is to proclamate it and to then gazette it. That proclamation and gazette takes the place of the possible amendment. So there isn't a need to amend an act simply because it refers to a different minister. But you refer to the proclamation and to the government gazette that shifted the function to another minister. So the definition now of minister or executive authority is immediately the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure. Legislative processes take very long, and Parliament is already inundated with legislation that requires, for instance, our work on the expropriation bill that is late because it was not tabled. That should rather take the place of that type of legislative work. There was another point that I wanted to just make about the steering committee's funding. I think I referred to it. Steering committee's funding, I think I dealt with that in a particular way. If members need to know a specific question in this on this, can be asked to both the president as well as the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure. My understanding is that there wouldn't really be funding needed because these people are doing their work in any case and they are getting paid on a monthly basis. If there is funding required, remember what the steering committee will do is monitoring evaluation and oversight. And that type of work is work that you do in your normal run of work. There isn't a need for funding. The officials come in, they report, they walk away with further work to do in that regard. I can't understand what the funding for the steering committees would be needed, would be for. I wanted to say that the Spatial Planning and Land Use Management Act, it's two pieces of legislation I want to refer to. The SPLUMA is a very important act. SPLUMA gives effect to some of the human rights. The local government level. And SPLUMA put in place the need for spatial development frameworks that join people together. It facilitates local development, business opportunities, etc. The problem that we have, and this is pointing to our public works bill, I think one of the members beautifully referred to the need for this bill to come and deal with that type of legislation. Our public works bill and some of our public works procurement regulations do not align itself to SPLUMA. And that will affect how the IDMS is rolled out and how the district development model is rolled out, as well as some aspects of this project. The Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. The Constitution makes it clear that all three levels are they are independent, they are interdependent, but they dare not cross into one another's power. Now, when it comes to infrastructure projects, part of the reason why things are slowing down is because of the dependence, the silo mentality, and this is what the IDA needs to unlock for the PIC to work. And that's why you would find mayoral administrative staff, provincial administrative staff, and national administrative staff coming together inside structures of the PIC that is in that rectangular block that I referred to in the workflows, to do their work in steering committees and report to the executive authorities on some of these projects. But as I say, SPLUMA needs to be taken into account in the future development of some of our acts for public works and for infrastructure. But I want to stop there to give Inez also a chance to deal with some of the issues that were raised. Thank you, Acting Chair. I thought I saw the Chair, but I'm not certain.
Thank you. I think the reason why
thank you very much. Anything to say?
Thanks, Honourable Chair, and Shu'aib and members and colleagues. It is still morning. It's just raining buckets right now. The reason why I put in the issue at the top, Shu'aib, just in terms of the parliamentary legal services, is because you have now clarified this the situation. It's just that usually I think you find that there's always an instance where if somebody is not clearly told this is your role, how will the functioning within the PMTE especially change to actually accommodate the changes, especially with this responsibility of the PIC? I haven't really mentioned it, but the Giyama is still our guiding legislation when it comes to the issues of just in terms of, but that's in relation to the accommodation, in relation to the immovable asset register, etc. And I think what has happened over time, even though this act was came into effect in on the 22nd of November 2007, what has happened is that in many instances departments have not really followed the provisions, especially the requirements of the user asset management plans as well as the custodial management plans. And what has happened is since these plans, for example, say that they're a three-year, sort of a three-year forward-looking plan, but if the three-year forward-looking plan is not presented to Public Works, it makes it difficult, as Honorable Graham was mentioning, in terms of the issue of maintenance, that there's no proper maintenance plan in place to ensure that the life cycle of these immovable assets is actually sustained and its life cycle extended. I'm not sure if I have left anything out. Members can just let me know. Thank you. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ines.
Acting Chair.
Honourable members, are you? Yes. Yes, sir.
I just want to. I wanted to just say that it's very crucial. The issue of the Guyama that Ines raises is very important. And it makes the immovable asset register that much more important for them to report to us on the status of it as it is currently. The Guyama, or importance of the Guyama, is that the state has a lot of assets valued at a huge amount of money that is not liquid. It's not liquid because our trading aspect of PMTE is not being operationalized. So PMT is operationalized in terms of law, I mean, in terms of it has a structure. The problem that Ines raises is that the people that occupy the positions, a very few of them, are professional built environment specialists that assist with that trading aspect of PMTE and the implementation of Guyama properly. They are generalists that came from DPW as in the old days. Now that we have PMTE, we needed property specialists. Now we're going into a third stage now with this department, where infrastructure component is added. So now you need professional built environment people again. And again, perhaps the PIC is a good idea because you're getting private industry in. But we need to find out, and here again, a question is there. So how are you going to ensure that people stay? Because if you look at the salaries these people are being paid in private industry, it is a massive amount. In fact, when Public Works train people through internship, very often they are poached and they leave to private industry in the process. They are never staying with us. So the incentives are needed. I think one of the slides referred to that. I just thought I needed to add that to this. Thank you. That we're in a different stage. The second stage of PMTE didn't bring enough staff in qualified in terms of property. The third stage is infrastructure, and again, we need that. And we need proper answers on these. Thank you. Thank you, Acting Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Shreep. Honorable Chairperson, are you back?
Yes, I'm back. I don't know whether I'm clear now, but I had to switch off my video because it makes it worse. I don't know whether my line is clear because I'm still under load shedding.
It is clear, Chairperson.
Yes,
okay.
And you can take over your seat, please.
Hello?
Chairperson.
You are cutting. I don't know whether it is because of the challenge that I have. Honorable Mchobo.
Yes, I think there is no.
Okay. I can hear you now. The challenge is that I don't know where you are, whether I was going to have a second round of comments and questions so that we allow members to come on after the explanation and responses of who Mr. Dazen, who Ushu Abe, and who Ines. Are there any follow-up questions or comments, honorable members, on what you have raised? I'm sorry, guys.
I've got nothing to add at this stage, Navita, Chairperson.
Neither have I, thank you, Chair.
Chair.
Yes, Honorable Nkumalo.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks to Ushuweb Noinem for a great presentation on this, which I think they've done their utmost best to bring us on board. However, Chair, my concern would be that of Ukiyama. I feel that maybe members, maybe if Ushuweb or Noinem can actually be explicit in terms of Ukiyama and how do we play our role in terms of ensuring that Government Immovable Asset Management Act is adhered to, particularly in provinces, because I don't know whether our jurisdiction runs right through the provinces and the district offices of public works. So it will be the accountability of Ukiyama from the Portfolio Committee. I don't know whether I'm being able to put my point across correctly, but the imbalance is, for me, I think there is a gap there from our side in the Portfolio Committee. And what should we do then to ensure that we play our entire oversight role in particular to that end? Thanks, Chair. I don't know whether it makes sense or not.
No, you are. Inez?
Thanks, Chairperson. Just in terms of what the Act says it provides for, it says that it provides for a uniform framework for the management of an immovable asset that is held or used by a national or provincial department. So the Act extends from national and province. Municipalities was not included even initially when the Act was being discussed. When the bill was being discussed before it became an Act, because the Minister of Local Government at the time said no, that the Municipal Finance Management Act would take care of that. So that's one of the reasons why at a certain point the committee was contemplating that actually Giyama must also be re-looked at to include that aspect. But basically, and the other issue that it says is to ensure the conditioning, the coordination, of the use of an immovable asset with the service delivery objective of a national or provincial department. So that's where it comes in terms of all these, the hospitals, the correctional services, the home affairs departments. That's all of those buildings that our public works would be responsible for. And then to provide for the issuing of guidelines and minimum standards in respect of the immovable asset by a national or a provincial department. But in terms of the user management plan, one of the things that plan wants is, for example, it would say that if, let's say, Home Affairs needs a particular asset in, let's say, in a province, so it must tell Public Works up front that this is the type of asset I need, this is the type of, this is what it must look like, this is its condition, and then Public Works must then provide that. And I think that was one of the reasons why at a certain point with this inner city regeneration program that Public Works wanted to embark on is the issue of precincts, where they mentioned that if you have to facilitate ease of access for the public, that instead of having, let's say, a Home Affairs building separate from, let's say, the police station, that a precinct actually be contemplated, that when they were going forward, they would actually build precincts rather, so that a lot of the interlocking institutions would be in one place, especially in rural areas where people have difficulty accessing these services. So that is the role of YAMA that the accounting officers need to ensure is that the condition of the building, which includes not only the building itself, but lifts, stairs, etc., that all of that is actually taken care of. And that is where the issue that Honorable Graham and other members have raised before in terms of the maintenance. But if departments do not actually set forth their immovable asset needs to the department well in advance, this is where the issue comes from, that then they don't have the adequate funding needed for that asset to be acquired or to be upgraded, and then you just have this whole, which could possibly, I'm just speculating, for example, in terms of what we might find at Bait Breach, for example, if there was not a seamless communication to say, look, this is this border fence, 40 kilometers, it's deteriorating. We have had a maintenance plan in place, it's failed, now we need to start from scratch. But if they had done that up front, and I think Shu'aib mentioned that in terms of the, if you don't have a needs assessment done initially, then we have issues like this. So I think, Honorable Mumalo, I think you are very correct that more emphasis needs to be placed on the immovable, as on YAMA, and that the portfolio committee, I think, needs to spend more time. I think the committee has tried in the past to actually get all these user asset management plans from departments and from Public Works itself to say who has signed, because in their annual performance plans, they indicate like 46 departments are supposed to sign, and we've had this returned, etc. But I think a better sight on this area from the committee will be more useful. Thank you.
Any additions, Shwe?
No, ma'am, I
think... Honorable
Chagu? I'll call the name. Honorable Chagu? No, thank you very much, Chairperson. No, I've been listening for sensitive in terms of the presentation. You know, with all the input that we're putting in, they are realigning, and there will be oversight in terms of when the projects are happening and all of that. Well, I don't know. For me, it's just to say it's a wait and see approach. I don't want to speak and put some suggestions, and then you find that the way that the department lately doesn't want to listen to the committee. And sometimes I ask myself, is it like, well, maybe we'll push and push, maybe we might be heard, things that are really happening and all of that. So on the issue of actually even with this committee that has been established in the presidency itself, it creates another structure again that is confusing for myself. And then I ask myself, where do we actually fit in as this committee? Because all infrastructure development, public, that's why it says public works, you know. That's why I've been very quiet and just listening tentatively. But where are we going? Are we, you know, I'm trying to find myself. So, but for me, Chairperson, it's a wait-and-see approach. But, and also I've been asking myself to say, when are these projects starting? Where are they? Are they already happening? And then when I ask people that, you know, they are happening already, it's just that we are collating them into one
all the projects which are done by the municipality, the province, and national, you know, that is called an infrastructure project. And I asked my son, I asked him, has it begun this thing? He said, yeah, it is. So for me, it's just a wait-and-see approach, and then there and there, I'll actually find myself and check what is this committee really, what is this infrastructure, what is what. I agree with the other members in terms of the corruption. We are going to experience a huge, you know, we must just be prepared that corruption is going to be on a large scale, because that is where people are making money on this infrastructure, you know, the project. As you have seen, the one with the Bay Bridge, the Bay Bridge was just a starter. But the main cost is coming. So the main cost is what we're going to hear, another COVID-19 gate, REV2, on this infrastructure thingy. So for me, it's a wait-and-see approach. I will check it up. I do have an experience in terms of the construction. So it's going to be a nightmare. And with the instruments that we are having currently as the government chairperson to say, if a person has stolen, and then Auditor General comes in, and then the Auditor General says, no, you must improve again the next time, don't do it again, put, you know, the control. It's going to be a lot of looting that is going to, I foresee a huge looting that's going to happen on this, in infrastructure. Another thing, chairperson, with the report that I've read on the expropriation of land, you know, I think that for myself also on this one, chairperson, I'm going to wait up until we pass the section 25 of the Constitution, because I believe that if you do those things of willing buyers, willing seller things, it does not work, because you come to a place where you really government needs to do something. And then you get a huge resistance, and the project stays for a very long time. For me, I was very excited when the parliament passes the section 25 to expropriate the land without compensation. Yes. And even in the constitution, if you read it in section 25A, it says you can actually expropriate the land without compensation for public use. And I hope that with this committee of the steering committee will be able to make sure that if the land is for public use, the public interest, it must be owned by the government. Because one of the things that's going to make a delay of many infrastructure projects is the negotiation between the so-called owner of the land and the government itself. It is, if you look into the history, maybe Schwab can actually maybe, I don't know if we maybe did the research on that, on many projects that has been put on hold because there's no finalization of agreement between the landowner and the government itself. I remember the time I was sitting in the committee here in Gauteng in the GPM. They were supposed to do a hub next to the airport, the economic hub. The problem that the department was not reaching a conclusion with the owner of the land. They were taken from pillar to a chili post, and the government cannot do anything because it would be litigated left, right, and center. So for me, the first prize is to expropriate the land without compensation. And then secondly, the buildings which are not being used and the owner we cannot find. And I hope that that expropriation bill will now find expression to come to the committee and we process it so that if building is not occupied and we cannot find the owner, we expropriate it as the government so that it can be used for the public, for the public use. So, Chairperson, those are my two cents where to. It's that, born and share all these things, but just that is the concern I have. In number one is the issue of the land question that's going to hold project for a long time due to an arrogant individual who doesn't actually want to come to pass. Secondly, is that I will maybe one day not be confused about this formation of so many committees, appointment of so many people. I don't even know who are the events and only what is their mandate and what is the department. So it's a confusion of the confusion. But again, we'll check, and I very good work for, to the researchers. Much appreciated, Shuab and Inam. That was quite a bit informative. I did take time to have a look at it and all of that. So I am navigating. Thank you very much, Shepherd.
Chair, I raised
the
hand just for a comment, Chair.
Oh, okay, Honorable Trin, you're back now.
Yes, also having connection problems, so I'm now using my data. But, Chair, I think where I disagree with the Honorable Chapo is that I don't know whether we should adopt a wait-and-see approach. So I think that that's the first, perhaps my first point of disagreeing with him. I think my second point, obviously, and I don't want to enter into a debate on the expropriation of land without compensation. I think government is going to be able to expropriate, and they must use the law and the measures that are available for these particular projects, which are necessary for infrastructure growth, necessary for social public use and the good of members of the country. I think government does have the ability to actually expropriate, and I think we must actually follow that through. But where I do agree with him is, and one of my concerns is on the possible levels of corruption that could take place. And then the blame, like with some other government projects, which then went to court, and then Parliament and members of Parliament were accused by the court for not exercising their oversight role. And so this is a particular concern where if we do not take proactive steps to ensure and to insist on our oversight role over all these projects. And I think there's some 276 projects worth some 2.3 trillion rand. And that's huge. And I know that there are already those who are corrupt and those fraudsters out there who are salivating just to get their hands on some of this money. So it's going to be important for us not to adopt a wait-and-see approach. But I think as Joyce Inez and some of the others and some of the other colleagues have indicated, we have to insist that we play our oversight role, and where there is no clarity, we have to insist that and be sure that clarity is given so that we know exactly what it is that we, as the Committee of Public Works and Infrastructure, that we are able to carry out our mandate and do so effectively. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mumalo. Honorable Chaguga Ngoguge, we have more. He wants to do it a lot, but because we are in a workshop, we may ask him, Honorable Chaguga, you may come in.
Chair, it's not for the, I'm just saying, I just wanted to clarify very quickly. No, what I was saying, I was just saying that myself, because of the whole country that is there, I'll wait and see and check if whatever they are proposing is going to work. Yeah, but that is what I was saying. And also on the expropriation of land without compensation, I'm saying that the Parliament should immediately should speedily adopt the Section 25 of the Constitution for land expropriation without compensation, because I know, I mean, I've got the experience, because I was sitting, I'm not saying that I don't have an experience on the issue of that thing of the of when you're having a project, a government is having a project. The problem is that the owner of the land takes time, doesn't want to agree on the price, and the government will have a price that is not affordable. That is what I'm saying. I'm saying that even in the legislature, you can check with the economic development in the legislature. That is the problem we are having. It's there in the documents of the legislature where an owner of the land did not want to agree with the government. They were putting up, some ridiculous prices. I'm saying it's a risk that is there, a huge risk. So we must also note that and check it, because if you do expropriation of land without compensation, at least now we have land available to execute all the projects that we want to execute. That is what I meant. On the wait and see approach, I'm saying this is the confusion of another confusion and all of that committees, but I myself personally, I will watch it and check it. I'm not saying that the committee must know, we cannot go into oversight. We just have to check where's our jurisdiction, because it's in the presidency, there's the people who are being appointed and all of that. That's what I was saying, Chair. Thank you very much.
Chair, if I may have a follow-up, Chair, not necessarily a dialogue. I'm not going to throw the cat amongst the pigeons here.
You want to explain something that you said on what you said.
I want to speak about the management committee in the act.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think there are many of us who have also had years of experience. I sat on economic and development in council for some 18 years. So I think clearly where expropriation of some properties happened, it was an exception where we had some challenges. But I think it's very rarely that we did have challenges, particularly in the Etiquini area, where I sat on economic and development for 18 years on expropriation. So it's not necessarily it's more the exception rather than the rule. But Chair, coming to the management committee side of things, if Ines could just clarify, one of the, I think it is part of the Act Part 2, Section 6 on the management committee. It speaks about the functions of the management committee being 6.3b(3). It talks monitoring the implementation of strategic integrated projects, subject to the guidance and direction of the council. So that seems to be one of the kind of conflicts of interest. And then it also speaks about Roman numeral 7, review reports and make recommendations to the council to ensure the harmonization and the improvement of implementation actions, policies, and laws relating to infrastructure development and investment in infrastructure. So whether this particular management committee is essentially going to be doing the work, some of the work that we are going to be doing, or whether there can be a synchronization, and whether if they are going to be, for example, answerable to us and give reports to our committee, then it's fine, because it actually helps us if they're going to be eyes and ears on the ground. But if they're going to be subsuming or taking over the responsibilities that are accorded to us, then I can actually see some challenges. So I think perhaps just some input around the functions of that management committee, whether it actually takes over the role of the committee or whether there's a synchronization and a harmonization possibly that could take place. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Tring. Shuaib, can you come on this one?
Yes, thank you very much. The point is absolutely correct from Member Singh. This is part of the structure that's inside, that the IDA, this is why we say the IDA, because it legislates the work of the PICS, it makes that possible to do oversight, where you would have a mayor doing oversight over some aspects of the work of a provincial department, and the other way around. So they're not doing it as in their original positions, but as part of that legislated manco of that functions inside PICS. And the honourable thing is absolutely correct. There should be no fear in the case of these things that they do our work. They actually don't do our work. I've always argued that oversight functions inside a minister, mayor, or premier's office is a different oversight, far too close to the resources than what standing committees in provinces, your council committees, and the NCOP Select Committee and our portfolio committees at National Assembly must do over those resources. We do oversight in a much more interrogative fashion. And I think we need to take what we say when we talk in that last few slides about clarity very seriously. That clarity is about joined up work that is being done with other committees over these types of structures inside PICS. If we don't get that right, because notice also in the definitions how these manacos make their own rules in terms of how they do oversight. And remember, they must do it via what the PSMA says, not what the IDA says about finances and procurement, but what it says about the PSMA. But you'll notice that they may not apply the PSMA as rigorously as we should, and our sister committees should. The issue of joined up oversight work is crucial, because this is joined up executive policy driving work. And we need to sharpen our tools for that, because the Act assists the executive authority to do things. The only thing that assists us is the Constitution and the oversight and accountability model that Parliament developed for committees to do its oversight. And so that is why we're hoping that what comes out of this meeting will give us as staff the start to start on a strategic plan for this committee for 5 years, for instance. And we are waiting instruction from the committee in that regard. Thank you, Chairperson.
Let me again out of the meeting due to load shedding and network. I missed some of the presentation, but I do have the notes that she sent to us before. In my closing, I don't know that anyone from the honourable members want to say something, because I want to wrap up now and close. Trade had indicated earlier on that at 12 in their area there will be loaded. Honourable Sharon was kicked out of the meeting. Honourable Matebula, they struck me with low shedding. So they left of the meeting, and we continue even now. Yes.
Maybe before you wrap up, can you just tell us about the oversight on Friday, the arrangement, everything up to date?
Okay. I had to switch. My line, switch it off. firstly, before we go to the issue of the oversight, it's appreciating the comments from the honourable members that we shape up our overall report and note on the reality. What honourable has said and highlighted, we are concerned as members of this committee. I think they have said it clearly that ISA and us as this committee, we are thinking that we don't see the need for IGT to be closed down. I think we still need to pursue that debate with the existing minister and the FNDS and the deputies. But also, this workshop and the input thereof should assist us in moving towards our strategic plan. Remember, we had planned before the state of disaster was declared and the such lockdown that we had to do a strategic plan. I think Trey has mentioned it, that we some of what has been said today may guide us in developing a strategic plan for us. This portfolio comes next 3 years. It's no longer 5 years now. We are done with the first year, so we are in the second year now. So we can be in the next 3 or 4 years. So we want then our team, that is the researcher and the content advisor, to start compiling info for our strategic plan. The reality is that we are going to live with this new normal of having meetings like this, virtual. We have managed to do a workshop virtual. So I think even the strategic plan, we must start preparing for it. We once said we can even hold it over the weekend if there are meetings that are to be held that will make us not to continue the strategy and participate because of the time constraints. That maybe we start in the morning and we're expected at 2 to be in the plenary. So we can take weekend, knowing fully well that if we take Saturday, then the entire day will be us. If we take Friday, the entire day will be dealing with our strategic plan of this committee. So I am then asking our team to start compiling the documentation and preparing some info for us to do our strategic plan. I think this workshop is a start of that, and a lot of information that we discuss here may go to the package of our strategic plan. Remember, Inez, the Giyama, and also the immovable asset register. We have serious issues on the issue of the immovable asset register. We've talked with the department on its challenge of not having a functional immovable asset register. So, if you can prepare something there, so that you know what to do as this committee, and that will assist us in moving forward and raising issues with the department playing our oversight role. So I wanted to finalize the issue of the workshop on that this must go forward to the strategic plan, which Mola, working together with Aboshu Aid and NES, will soon communicate to us. On the issue of the oversight, as we all know, we're going to the base bridge on Friday. It will be we're traveling on Friday, honorable members, to Limpopo. We'll fly from different areas, but we'll meet in Joburg, and then from there we'll travel. Because there are no flights from Joburg to Limpopo, so we will be traveling by road from Joburg to Limpopo. The issue of time, we'll communicate it in the group at what time we will be moving. It will be a joint oversight because we will be joined by the Home Affairs and the program will have a virtual. We don't want to be in one room. We need to observe the health protocol. We will be in a virtual meeting briefing session in your room. So please bring your gadgets, especially the tablet. If you use tablet, if you're using the laptop, you need to bring in your laptop so that so it will be briefing session. And then in the morning we'll try to the big bridge where we'll spend like 3 hours or more looking at all those areas, and then later in the evening again we will then have our virtual debriefing session, and then in the morning we'll be traveling back to our to Dubai to set our flight to our places. That is that oversight. Many of us have received the travel arrangement right now, but for security reasons this is recorded and maybe it's live on the parliamentary channel. I don't want us to talk about the times and all that. If one of members can agree with me on that one. But on the group we can talk. That is that about the oversight. Any other questions on it? Honourable members, I don't know whether I'm audible enough.
Chair, Honourable Trin here.
Yes, Honourable Trin.
Chair, could I ask if we could maybe on our group chat just have a draft or a copy of the program? So that,
okay.
Yeah, because we also have other meetings, some of us, that either we want to know whether we can attend on the Friday or we have to excuse ourselves. So I think it would be good if we could have some kind of program for the weekend.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Ms. Martinez, if you can drop the program in the WhatsApp, the one that we agreed upon, I will share, yes. Any other questions, members?
No, thank you,
Chair. Honourable members, we seriously have a challenge today. This issue of load shedding, is really disadvantaged to some of us. I missed some of the slides of Usho Ed. But thank you again for your participation and your engagement in the workshop. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Chair.
Immediately.